the things that people find beautiful are actually not perfect. There is an imperfection to them. And I think this is the difference between creating and producing as well, right? Nature doesn't resist change. We obviously do because of the mind, but we're also not separate to nature. So yeah, I find comfort there.
Welcome to The Lavender Lifestyle, the podcast on personal growth and lifestyle design. My name's Eileen, and I'm here to guide you to shine as your brightest self and create your dream life. We all have a light within and the power to create a life we love. Every Sunday, we'll share thoughtful conversations exploring how we can build a better future for ourselves and our world. Life is an art. Make it your masterpiece. Hello, my loves. Welcome back to the Lavender Lifestyle Podcast. It's Eileen. Today we have a beautiful, soulful episode for you on how following what lights you up is the spiritual path. So today we talk about spiritual growth, honing your intuition and connection to your soul, embracing life seasons, and being inspired by nature and beauty. Our lovely guest today is Rebecca Campbell. Rebecca Campbell is a transformational author, mystic, artist, speaker, teacher, and podcaster supporting people to connect with their soul. Founder of the Inner Temple Mystery School and Oracle Card Reader Certification, Rebecca's mission is to weave the sacred back into everyday life. Hello, Rebecca. Welcome back to the podcast. I am so happy to have you here, and it's been so long. I looked back at our episode. It's been 7 years since we last spoke. I think last time we spoke about Light is the New Black. I love that book, by the way. Now we're here, and I feel like we're both so different, right? We've evolved. Oh my
God. Well, don't they say that like every cell in your body changes in 7 years?
Yes.
So we're completely new people.
Exactly. So let's catch up. How have you been? How have you changed since then? And what have you worked on?
Oh, wow. Well, every cell has definitely changed. Yeah. I mean, I know we all have changed. I mean, it's been such a huge period these past 7 years, hasn't it? Like not just individually, just from a planet perspective. I have had 2 kids, so that's a big change.
Amazing.
I've got a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old now. I live in Glastonbury in the UK, which is it's quite a hippie town, really. It's beautiful sacred sites, sacred wells here. That was very unexpected. It was not part of my plan, but here we are. And I've created a lot for sure. I mean, I find particularly through difficult times in my life, I actually find creating like gives me peace. I don't know if you're the same. It's like it kind of holds me in a way. And yeah, it's definitely I've been through like big changes individually too. Like what have I been working on? Definitely myself too, like everyone else on the planet. Yep. Lots of big changes around like nervous system regulation, connecting deeply with my body. Yeah. So kind of really integrating some of the like earlier spiritual awakening experiences that I had, you know, even those ones that are like spontaneous and instant, they take time to really ground and integrate. So yeah, it's been all of the above. How about you?
Oh my gosh. This can take an entire podcast as well. Yeah, I feel like I'm a different person. I went through so much healing. When we last spoke, I feel like I just started my journey of personal growth and I was very career focused trying to get Lavender off the ground. And then I had like different phases of burnout and, you know, overdoing it. And since I guess 2019 through the pandemic era, I went heavily into healing, also going into my body, like doing more somatic, holistic types of healing. And I feel in general, as a person, I'm more relaxed, at peace, and just more authentic. I think before I was trying, I was pushing and striving. And then now I'm more like, it's going to be okay. I can relax and able to ride the ups and downs with a little more grace. Still working on that part. I know it's crazy. Like I honestly, when I last spoke to you, I know you went through so much spiritual awakening. You were already very spiritual, so aligned. How does it feel to live like that? And to like, what evolves then in this spiritual journey? I'm just curious.
I've really inquired into the awakening process, and I've always wanted to know, like, is there a blueprint? Is there like a path to follow? And of course, when we're on the spiritual path, we eventually realize that it's not linear and that it's very individual. But what I have noticed is there tends to be different phases that we go through. Like, for example, our first awakening tends to be an awakening of the mind. And this is like when you're like, oh my gosh, like your eyes are open or a veil is lifted and you're like, I never saw it like that. And whoa, how have I not known this before? And it seems like it's this shedding of what we thought we knew. And at the same time, feeling like I need to find the answer. So it's a little more of like linear striving, as in like, oh my gosh, a whole new world or cosmos is out there. Let me find out the purpose of life. Once I've done that, once I've found my purpose and the purpose of life, then everything's going to make sense. And then, of course, we realize that it's a spiral journey. It's not a linear journey.
Yes.
Another form of awakening that I've observed within myself and many, many others is the heart awakening, which can often come through some form of grief. So it might be something like the loss of a loved one, like through death. It might be end of a relationship, end of a friendship, something that just like makes your heart ache. It cracks it open. Grief, of course, is evidence of how much we love and loved as well. And so we're dropping deeper into the heart there. When we go through those types of periods, the opportunity is sometimes it can feel like all the lights have been turned off. And, you know, we're at a more of a rock bottom type place. But often in my experience, what happens when we're in that moment, it's almost like the mind surrenders and invites the soul to come in and lead a little more, like as in like the heartbreak creates an opening for the soul to drop in a little more, right? And to connect in with what really matters in life. And then there's the like a body awakening, which sometimes happens to people where they might experience like kundalini rising, ancestral healing through their body, through their cells, like processing in that way. So yeah, they're the three main bits that I've been observing. I have noticed that it tends to go in that order. Like some people, it's heartbreak that opens it up to start with.
So mind, heart, and then body.
Yeah. And it's like each awakening causes like an expansion. And every time more soul, more spirit comes in. But then as more soul, more spirit comes in, more is revealed for us to, many different traditions call the parts of the awakening process like purification. Mm-hmm. And that word can be a little challenging because it can make it sound like it's like about getting to like a perfection state or like things aren't right the way they are, but it's more like a clearing, a cleansing, an opening, an expansion. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like letting go of the layers that is not the true you. That's how I see
right,
it.
Right.
I do want to touch on how you said it's a spiral, right? Can you explain more about that? So I got really into astrology and like things are always in cycles and you heal in spirals. Like you might heal from one thing and think you're done and then it comes back a few years later to like heal on a deeper level. But yeah, what is your view on that?
Absolutely. Well, I think we've all experienced it, right? We think that we've moved through something and then something happens. And like, while you and I are talking this weekend, it's the eclipse, which is like particularly lunar eclipse is a perfect time for your stuff to reemerge and just check, how are you with that? You know? And I think that if we are, you know, devoted to changing really, which rather than resisting change is going to happen regardless. It's just how much are we going to like allow it to happen. Then each time as we journey, every time we go around the spiral and we meet that thing that, oh, we wish we went through, but oh, are we not? It tends to get easier and easier and easier until, you know, I think many of us have had this experience like with a relationship, right? So there's the person that you break up with or the friend that you break up with and it's like really painful and you can't even possibly imagine breathing without them, or, you know, and then little by little by little, all of a sudden, there is a day where you see their name and you don't get triggered, you don't get activated, you know, and it's like, whoa, I'm actually over it. How did that happen? And it did not happen overnight. Absolutely. But there is a moment where it's like a switch has been.
And it's so good to know that, because sometimes when people are going through a tough time, they think it will last forever. And that's what scares us. Like, I'm always going to be like this. But knowing that life happens in cycles and the spiral happens, it's actually kind of like calming.
Totally.
Let's pause for a moment to thank today's sponsor, Shopify. There's something that happens when you finally stop asking, what if I'm not ready? And start asking, what if this is exactly the right time? I've spent years refining ideas, but there's a difference between thoughtful preparation and waiting for certainty that never comes. Sometimes the best thing you can do is start. When I think about what made it possible to turn Lavender into what it is today, a huge part was finding tools that didn't require me to become an expert at everything. That's what Shopify offered, a way to focus on the work I was meant to do. Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world and 10% of all e-commerce in the US. With hundreds of beautiful templates, you can build a store that feels completely you. Email and social campaigns connect you with people who resonate with your work. And while you focus on creating, Shopify handles inventory, payments, shipping, and returns. Turn your big business idea into with Shopify on your side. Sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling today at shopify.com/TLL. Go to shopify.com/TLL. That's shopify.com/TLL. So you wrote a new book, Your Soul Had a Dream, Your Life Is It. I love that title, first of all. Tell us about your book. What inspired you to write this and what is it about?
It's a book about kind of what we've been talking about, embracing change. Change is going to happen regardless. And life is always trying to initiate us into even more of who we are, right? And you were talking about astrology, big periods. Like I wrote this book during my midlife transits, which are really, there's a lot of Pluto, there's a lot of Saturn, and it's kind of, it pulls you to the depths. You're forced to kind of really look at what has always been there, stored in the body, what has been there in the center of your heart when you wake up in the middle of the night. And so it's a book definitely to hold you through periods that maybe you're challenging. It's a book to help you figure out what your soul is really calling you to do as well.
So what does it mean for you to live a truly soul-led life?
In essence, it is connecting in with that part of you that I believe chose to be here. It's like the part of you that existed before you took your first breath. And that part of you is so intelligent. It's got a plan. And if you listen to it, it's like you're living life according to your own terms versus like what society is telling you to do, right? It's like you're learning to take off the mask and really discover the life that would really light you up, the things that just come naturally to you, you know?
What is your advice for people who are trying to connect with that true soul part? Because, you know, in most of us have our, like, we're kind of pulled in all these different directions. We think we should be doing this or that. People are saying, telling us to go in different directions. So how do you connect? And then how do you know?
Great question. So I've got two different tools, right? So the first one is really simple. I wrote about this in my first book, which we had a conversation about, Light is the New Black. And that is all about following what lights you up. So write down a list of just like maybe three things that light you up. That, you know, because when you're lit up, you're inspired. And when you're inspired, you're in your spirit, you're connected to your soul. So following that, a path always emerges. For me, when I did that, I got flowers were the things that light me up the most. And I discovered how important beauty is for me. And I know it is for you too. Yes. Everything you create is so beautiful. And I think we connect with that pastel aesthetic as well. And so I followed the trail of like flowers. And so I'd buy myself flowers once a week. I put them all around my studio where I used to live. And then I discovered Regent's Park Rose Garden in London, where there's literally like 40,000 roses. They're amazing. So beautiful. So I would go there every day and meditate. And when I did that, I had the guidance for such a long time to write a book. Wow. But I just didn't know where to start. But by being around the flowers, I connected to my inner voice and I started writing. And it was one of the most amazing moments of my life when I eventually it turned into my Instagram profile, a blog, and then I got a contract for a book, and I'm there putting the final full stop and pressing file save on my Word document for my book that I'd written, and closed my laptop and looked up, and I saw. And I just burst into tears because I was looking at these incredible roses and me sitting there, and I realized, oh my gosh, what started as following what lit me up, which was roses, wow, turned into me writing a book from park bench to park bench to park bench. What?
That's so beautiful.
So beautiful. And so, you know, it's like, don't underestimate those things that light you up. Yes. And you do it so beautifully in everything that you create, you know, and as you know, you kind of got to follow the trail and the path appears. It's like, my favorite movie growing up was The Wizard of Oz. So it's like, follow the yellow brick road. You don't know where it's going, but yeah. And then the other tip that I've got, I teach this thing. It's very, very simple as well, called the 3 steps to living a soul-led life. And they are, step one is connect. And so it's connect to your soul, spend some time with your soul. And I'd recommend doing that through some kind of spiritual practice, like meditation. I know you offer so many of them yourself, but don't stop there. And it can be 5 minutes. It doesn't have to be ages, but then so connect. And then step two is listen. So listen to your soul. I do a practice called soul inquiry, which is essentially journaling. Ask yourself a question. What's my soul calling me to do today? And then step three is act on it through a baby step. So, you know, today my soul is calling me to sing with my daughter, right? And I'm like, yeah, I've not really been playing today. I've been working quite a bit. And so, yeah, I kind of need that lightness. Okay, I'm going to do that. What's the baby step? Well, straight after we finish talking, I'm going to go downstairs and press play on Spotify and dance with her, you know? Aww. And so it's like making it really, really bite-sized, because the thing about intuition is it doesn't always make sense. Mm-hmm. Like what lit me up, flowers, I had no idea that that was going to lead to something that was completely life-changing for me.
That's beautiful. And it's also a reminder, because like I'm also very inspired by flowers, but it's just a reminder that like nature can be so inspiring. And I imagine you in that like rose garden. It's almost like a movie scene.
It literally is. It's so beautiful. Oh my gosh.
I love that you talk about making it bite-sized, of taking the action on what your soul wants, because we always think it's supposed to be this big thing. Like, what is my purpose? What am I supposed to do? Mm. What is the big thing that I'm meant to be doing right now? And I think people get caught up in that, but it really is, it could be anything. It's like, I just feel like making a warm tea right now, or I just feel like it's those little things. That's your intuition, and your intuition always has an opinion, right?
Yes.
Do you believe that it's always speaking? And what is your thought on intuition?
I think our intuition's always available to us, and every single one of us is intuitive, and it's through our subtle senses that we receive it. So sometimes we might not trust it because it's subtle. The only time I would say that we don't receive our intuition, and this is when I get most frustrated. I remember saying to one of my mentors in my 20s, it's really weird. I feel like I'm not receiving guidance. I had, my question was, where should we move to? Where should we live? And I was just not, I got one visual of me laying down on this soft grass, right? I could see it, I could smell it, but that's it. That was the only bit that I got over and over again. Like, I'm talking months here. And so I started doubting myself. And she said to me something, which I teach my students now, which is, sometimes if you don't hear your intuition, it can mean wait, it's not yet time.
Yeah.
And that was so frustrating to hear, but it ended up being so true because in the end, after a couple of months, this one morning I woke up and I got the word Glastonbury, and then I went downstairs and I was living in London at the time, and my husband shared something with me, and it meant that we literally had to act on it. And I went online, and there was a place that had just gone on the market, which ended up as our house. And so sometimes things can be being orchestrated.
True.
Yeah. And the pause is like, you know, trusting the season of winter.
Yes. Yes. I see life as it's a co-creation with the divine, with the universe, because your soul doesn't always know what's best for you at that moment. Sometimes you just have to wait. This happened to me too. Like sometimes it's like you think you really want something, but that wasn't for you. There's a detour until you realize like, oh, right. Like I had to wait for this sign or this opportunity.
Yes. So true. Yeah. So true.
Oh, I love that. So how do you stay faithful? Like, how do you keep the faith and trust that you are being redirected and everything is like working out as it should?
Two ways. I don't always do them. Well, the first one is, I think this is why we have a spiritual practice, to hold us in those times when life's really noisy, we're really busy, or we're really doubting it. So it's like we're building up that devotion, that connection to something greater holding us. And I think another way is to like have conversations with people in your life about, like, I went for lunch with a new friend yesterday and we went deep fast, which was, I just loved. And we were both sharing the kind of the big story of our life, you know, like when this happened and then this happened, this happened. And when you look at it like that, you're like, oh my gosh, like there was a thread all through it the whole time. But in the moment, we forget. And so I think having those like relationships with people who can remind you of that and can kind of point to different moments when maybe things seemed like they were crumbling, and maybe they were, but then something beautiful came as a result of it. You know, so I think that zoom out and in ability can be really helpful. Yeah.
Yes, definitely. And also like knowing that it's not all in your control and learning to release control and be okay with all these surprises, because you have to make space for the beauty and the gifts that come.
It's so true. I think that's why like I'm such a nature lover. Like I know you are as well, because I think just noticing the seasons as they're changing, noticing the leaves falling, noticing where, like in winter and it seems like nothing's going to grow again, things have never been more active beneath the surface, you know, as the buds burst on through, it's happening within us too. And I think there's something about how nature doesn't resist change. We obviously do because of the mind, but we're also not separate to nature. So yeah, I find comfort there.
Yeah. That's also a lesson I had to learn the past few years, to like embrace the seasons of life, right? When we always want to be in our highest season, like go, 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 everything's flourishing, but that's not nature. Nature has the low seasons, the high seasons, everything in between. How have you learned to honor your seasons in your life?
Well, I think really it's been about being able to map what season I'm in at each time. Because, yeah, like in a world of content and us all just like seeing whatever else is doing, scrolling, all of that, it's really easy to compare your winter with someone else's summer when they're in full bloom, you know? But the thing is, like, it's impossible. It's not sustainable to be in summer all year round. Like, we burn out. It's, no one can do it. And so remembering that, like, if you find yourself in the comparison, be like, what am I actually comparing here? Because, like, this person will have their winter soon and you'll be in your summer, you know? So I think knowing how to navigate what season you are in, and in different parts of our life, we can also be in different seasons. Like, you know, maybe your work is in a winter season, but your romantic life is in summer, you know?
It's so true.
And so just really honoring that. And I think nature is so intelligent and we are part of nature. So we are too as well. We have it, the intelligence within us. But if we are to like see and really revere and respect the intelligence of nature, we'll be like, oh, like if the rose tried to hold on to its petals, the fruit wouldn't come or the second bloom wouldn't come either. And so knowing that like if you try and prolong something to just skip over to a different season, you're missing the medicine and gifts that that season has for you. And if you do, you're also going to miss the potency of the spring and the summer because you will not have had the reserves being gathered, you know? So I think that's helpful to remember. And like I used to, I was born in Australia, or my biological family's from Australia. And I moved to London in my early 20s. And I used to every winter go back to Australia, and it was great, like catch up with family and friends. It was awesome. There was one winter after like, and it was actually when I had my rock bottom, when I decided to write my first book, like I started my business, everything changed in that winter. It was because I stopped. I literally was there in my studio in Notting Hill for this year, which was very surprising. All my friends had left London. They'd gone to family, friends, whatever. I think I knew like maybe one person in the city who I shared. I went to their place for their family place for Christmas. But besides that, I was there on my own. And it was like, I noticed this part of me thinking maybe I should just go to Australia, but I knew I was meant to stay there and I did. And because I did that, there was this space, this in that darkness, that fertile void of winter. I finally said yes to my soul calling. I acted on it. And so, you know, like that's not a summer experience. And I'm talking metaphorically and literally, obviously, but it gave me a summer that was bigger than I could have possibly imagined had I just skipped over it.
I love this story so much. I can relate, and I don't know if it's on the same scale, but it's also just understanding that in my low moments when I thought nothing, because obviously I've had very like high moments and busy moments and then low moments where things like are very slow and I'm feeling, I think mentally I'm struggling with it, but looking back, I realized that was when I had space to reflect. That was when I had space to get this new inspiration, these new ideas to work on something completely different. Like if I were so busy caught up in what I had been doing, I would never have had the space. And I think that's what those winters give us, is the space for the magic, space for reflection or change.
So true. Yeah. So true.
Time for another short break. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. October 10th was World Mental Health Day, and it got me thinking about the people who dedicate their lives to helping others heal, including therapists. There's something powerful about having someone who's trained to hold space for you, to help you untangle thought patterns you didn't even know were there, and to witness your growth without judgment. If something's been weighing on you, or you simply want to understand yourself better, therapy can be that space you're looking for. BetterHelp makes it easier to take that step. With over 12 years of experience and a network of over 30,000 licensed therapists, they've helped over 5 million people worldwide find the right therapeutic match. They do the matching work for you through a short questionnaire, and if you aren't happy with your match, you can switch to a different therapist at any time from their tailored recs. This World Mental Health Day, we're celebrating the therapists who've helped millions of people take a step forward. If you're ready to find the right therapist for you, BetterHelp can help you start that journey. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/TLL. That's betterhelp.com/TLL. I do want to ask you about oracle cards because you create so many beautiful decks. Why don't we first explain like what are oracle cards? And what inspires you to create them?
Traditionally, they're a divination tool. So you can consult an oracle to help you make decisions, for example, or glimpse into the future. But I think that they're way more than that. They're beautiful to start with, or they can be very, very beautiful. So most decks have a certain amount of cards. So all of mine have, or most of them have 44 cards, for example. And so you've got your deck, you tune into your soul, or you ask a question and you select a card to receive guidance, right? Why I love decks is they're physical. So it gives us a 3D physical thing to hold in our hands to focus our energy to connect in with our intuition. Now, you can do readings for other people. You can do them for your friends. You don't have to be like a professional psychic. It can just be like it's really like a container for you guys to explore a question or just deepen your connection as well. And then reading for yourself too, it can be a way of connecting with your soul. It can be a way of helping you make a decision. It could be a way of praying in a way. So many people who use my deck, and I love this, they use it as part of their daily practice. So, you know, wake up and maybe they'll do a meditation and then pull a card and journal on it, you know? So yeah, I just love decks so much.
Yeah. And I know that you just launched a new deck.
I did. Yeah.
Tell us about that one. What makes a difference?
Well, you know, my normal style, which is pastel. This is black and gold, but it is so gorgeous. And as you open it up, it reveals this gorgeous image for those who are watching rather than listening. And it's like an oracle card display frame. So you get to put your card of the day in and like put it on your altar or your bedside table. This deck is in a temple. This concept is really about going direct to the sacred, to the divine. Also, this really cool suit within the deck called the Polarity Suit. You know how in oracle card readings, there's like reversed cards? So when a card is kind of flipped around the other way, it can have a different meaning. So as a creative, I'd always wanted to embrace that concept. And so for this deck, we've got the polarity suit, polarity being like the opposites, right? And yeah. We've just been talking about the season. So I'll give you an example of one of the cards, which is inner summer, inner winter.
Oh.
And so it's got two meanings either side based on how you pull it. So yeah.
Nice. Oh, so you're saying only certain cards in the deck have the
double
sides.
Yeah, just one of the suits. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay. Fun. So how do you plan like a deck? Do you have certain themes that you put in all of them? And I'm just wondering what's your creative process?
When I create, I tend to work with guides when I create. And so I'll normally kind of, and don't know when it's going to come, but there'll be some kind of energetic connection that is made and it's clear what energy I'm working with. Then I'll get the title. Sometimes the title comes at that same point. Other times I'll, you know, be like crafting it and playing around a little bit. But yeah, I'll always then get the title. And then I'll do a mood board and a one pager where I really hone in what the deck is doing for the person who is using it. What's the transformation? How do they feel? What's the energy transmission? And I'll normally send that to my publisher. Then I kind of, my process is quite creative. I use extra sticky post-it notes and I fill the wall with loads of different names, like card names. I'll generally know it's 44 or 53, whatever, however many cards. And then I just kind of group them because often they'll be like similar. And sometimes the groupings will turn into like the subline, which is on them rather than just the title, or they'll kind of like morph together into a different concept. And then I'll do a mood board for every single card. I'll have my artist and then we'll work together in bringing the visuals to life. Sometimes some of the cards, like the behind me in my office here, I've got a picture of a card which is in the Starseed Oracle. It's a piece of art based on from the Full Into My Arms card, which actually is based on a mystical experience I had. So that one is like, it's got loads of energy in it. Like it's like a whole world in a card.
Yeah.
In my new book, Your Soul Had a Dream, the first chapter is all about that mystical experience. So it's like, whoa, it's like all of that in one card. So there might be cards like that, which are like literally born from spiritual experiences, and other ones are more conceptual. And yeah, and then I'll work with my artists. The artist I've done the most decks with is Katie Louise, and she is wonderful. She works very energetically. We work really deeply together, and it's like a back and forth until we get it. And yeah, I tend to have written the guidebook copy before any of the art has started, but sometimes what comes through in the art slightly changes what the words end up being. So it's a back and forth process. Yeah.
Do you have a routine before creating, like in order, because I feel like you have to be a very pure channel. Do you know what I mean? Like to be writing and creating all the time. Do you have some sort of way that you prepare for that?
I tend to just be working on one project at a time. Like sometimes I might have like a digital thing I'm working with, or, you know, just general running of the business, but I try as much as I can to have the focus, because I do work so much as a channel and with transmission. I want it to be just like one energy strand that I'm working with. Right. So then I'll just like live in that. I've got young kids, so, you know, yeah. I can't eat, sleep and do everything in it anymore. But when I step into the container, I like, for example, the way I structure my days, I run a business as well, obviously, but how I'll structure my day is it'll be like the mystic morning or the artist morning. So I won't do any linear mind work until like after lunchtime. Mm-hmm. And so I find the more space I have, the faster I can create. Like if I am like in the energetic container, the channel can open and I could write 5 card descriptions in like, I don't know, an hour, let's say, versus if I tried to just give myself an hour, I'd probably do 2, you know?
Yeah,
but I got to give myself the space around it.
That's so interesting.
I also do things like I'll create an altar for connecting with the energy that I'm working with or the creation I'm working with. So like bringing it into physical form. I'll also journal on it. I try to make sure my own spiritual practice comes first and then, you know, connecting to create, but sometimes I find that challenging to do. Like there's a bit of overlap.
Or maybe they're both the same, right?
They are. But you know, I think it's like, it's kind of like, I've got a card in the deck called the Mystic and the Machine. And to me, it's like just the classic situation that so many creatives and creators find themselves in the modern world, where we need to embrace technology and share things and content and do things, but it's easy to kind of go from creating as in like pure devotion, artistry to machine and producing and, you know, and so finding that balance. And yeah, I always notice that I'm going into the machine when I'm sitting down to my meditation to write. You know, versus just, yeah. So that's always like that's definitely a challenge.
This is such a subtle difference too. I kind of want to go deeper into that, because as a creative, and a lot of people we all live in this social media world where we feel like we want to, like, I guess, show up, and it's a constant expectation to be showing up and creating. What do you say to that?
We can lose ourselves in that, and we can also lose the potency and purity of the very thing that is our gift, that brought us the success that we've got. Like if we focus so much on producing rather than creating, of doing things for metrics, for example, or because everyone else is doing it, over being in that sweet nectar of the joy of creation itself, then I think it takes a toll on the soul. And ultimately, I think it's not good for us long term, even financially as well, you know? So it is this like fine balance. And I think the seasons are the greatest teacher with it, because, you know, I think of the artists that I are inspired by the most, they are
they always take time out. Like, they'll disappear for a couple of years and have no albums, and then all of a sudden they come back with something that is so life-changing. It's like, it's worth it. Yeah, I'm so glad that they didn't create every single month, you know? And maybe they were creating.
Yeah, imagine they never stopped and burned themselves out versus taking the time to be okay with disappearing and then taking the time to really create from that pure place.
Exactly.
It's not easy.
Wow. Oh my gosh, I know. How do you go with that?
I struggle because I'm on YouTube. I think it's easier. Like, let's say you're an author or like music artist, you can take longer periods of not creating, at least from my perspective. But I guess nowadays everyone's also expected to show up on social media often. I had to unravel my sense of self-worth from the productivity and the external validation. And there were a few years where I just, like, my posting used to be super consistent. And then I took a break. I took obviously a few breaks, and then now it's less consistent. I think I honor my own energy. Like, if I don't have energy for something, I'm not going to push myself through it. But I still struggle because there's a part of my brain that's like, you should be working on this. No, you know, so it's like the logic versus like how tired my body feels or my creative soul feels. And it's like, I'm better with taking care of myself, but I also felt the consequence of that, right? Things do slow down when you operate like that.
I'm intrigued what you said then as well about like the, I forget how you put it, but essentially the validation from, you know, tell me about that because I so resonate with that.
Because social media gives artists such an immediate feedback. And this is not just a social media thing. It's also from the way I was raised, right? You're raised to like perform, to get good grades, to, you know, it becomes addictive to like get praise and compliments for whether you're doing well or your talents or whatever to be a winner. And I think that's like it's a trauma that works in society because everything looks good, even though it's not healthy to depend your worth on external validation. Like I'm moving towards the, no matter what you do, you are already worthy and enough. And I can be a failure and still feel enough because I'm valuable in the intangibles. Like I have a personality, I have a sense of humor, I have like all these things that are so beautiful without me actually achieving or performing for anything in the world. Mm. And I think I've shifted more to a place where I create and I work like when it brings me joy and because it brings me joy and not because I'm trying to like meet some sort of expectation.
Yeah.
Like there's a difference between working out of that need to, oh, I have to keep up. I have to stay on top or I have to whatever, like the, some sort of pressure or need versus, oh, I'm working on this project because it's really fun. Like I'm learning something. Like right now I'm working on an app, which is something I've never done before. And I'm having so much fun because it's a creative process in something new. And it's just reminding me that true creativity is joy. And if you follow what lights you up, like you said, that will lead you to the right places. And ultimately at some point in my career, I have felt that creativity and that joy, but when you're doing the same thing for so long, it does burn you out. It does get tiring, which means you're supposed to be taking a break from that to work on something new.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So tell us more about your spiritual routine, like daily, weekly rituals. Also, because you're a mom, I assume you must have your hands full. How do you make the time? And then what does that look like?
Prior to being a mom, I was super strict on my daily practice. It was always in the morning. I would go for a walk in nature and meditate and journal. That's just what I did day in, day out, same meditation over and over again. There was a shift where I was being called to nature. I was being called more to the earth. And I started doing a practice, which I call earth pulsing, where it was literally like laying on the earth with the back of your heart on the ground and imagining like that pulse of nature, like that tells the flowers when to bloom, the seasons when to come and go, like the heartbeat of the earth. And my heartbeat regulating with it. So that was my practice for a while.
That's beautiful.
I do meditate now, but my practice is, it's more flexible now. I do practice every day, but sometimes it might be 5 minutes. Sometimes it might be 10 minutes. Sometimes I might chant, and sometimes often I'll dance. That is the biggest change in recent years. I have realized how much I pick up, because I'm sensitive energetically and emotionally, and how I sometimes mistake things that aren't even mine as my own. And so, yeah, my gosh, dancing is like my go-to now, particularly if I'm feeling stuck or a big emotion. Put on a song and move my body. That's my favorite form of practice. Yeah. And then it's always going to be writing and like journaling. But as I say, that tends to turn into work.
Yeah. Sometimes when you're journaling for yourself, does it become like, oh, this can become an Instagram post or this can become a book?
Yeah, I've got so many journals. This is the thing. And then the moment if you pick up your phone to write it, it's like the connection's gone, you know?
Do you ever journal like with your hand, or do you just type everything now?
I journal with my hand. I've got so many notebooks.
Okay.
I often channel when I'm journaling, but I also channel when I'm walking. I find the rhythm of moving my body or the motion, maybe it's also being in nature. I tend to hear what I call the whispers. And so I tend to hear it like I'll hear one word, then another word, then another word. I don't know what the sentence is going to be. And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, that's what that is. And so I'm writing on my phone when I do that. And so I do find that for Oracle decks, I tend to do that on my phone walking in the morning. Yeah.
You're like a little fairy in my eyes. You're just like picking up like the messages from nature. Like, oh, this flower is telling me this. This flower is telling me that.
It's so true. It's so true.
Oh my gosh. It totally fits with your whole brand too. It just makes sense. I see it now. Wow.
It's so funny. It's really interesting because I remember there was this, I'd been booked for this like really big event in London. It was at Piccadilly Circus in this incredible venue. Had been on like a goal of mine like for many, many years. But when the time came for it, I was going through quite a changing period. I remember saying to my friend, Holly, it's really weird. I'm like, all I want to do is talk about flowers. And she's like, so do that.
Yeah.
And I did. And little did I know that my work would emerge more into it. But, you know, it's the perfect example of like when you start feeling like trapped by one thing or heavy by one thing or bored by it, like follow the inspiration, because it'll lead somewhere, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Is there something else that has been inspiring you? Like, I'm curious, what is your new lead of inspiration to what's next after this deck is out?
Yeah, I've got a couple of like little seeds that are percolating, and I'm trying to figure out which one goes first, because I always have so many ideas, and it's just like, which is first? Like, there's one that's a book that I'm like, oh, that's going to be a deep dive. Ooh, do I really want that?
Yes.
And then there's a couple of decks and I'm like, ooh, I'm not sure which one will come in. Yeah. Yeah. I'm feeling into it.
Yeah. Like, how do you decide, or do you just wait and see where it leads you?
I tend to like do them up like in a like Google Slide doc, and I'll do a mood board and write into it a little bit, and like I kind of figure it out by bringing it to life a little bit. Yeah. And then I do show my editor, and if it is a physical product, and then like they might input a little bit as well. But yeah, but I do find that like often what will happen is I'll have like several ideas and we'll put them in order and say that we'll do them from top to bottom. But by the time I finish the first one, I've moved on from that list. And so some of them stay around for like the Inner Temple Oracle, that phrase I'd had for such a long time, but I hadn't had the life experience to bring it in yet. So it was kind of like always there, but it's like not yet time. Yeah. And then boom, it's time. Yeah.
I see. So you have a lot of ideas brewing, but we just don't know when they will be done.
Yeah.
Like, done cooking.
Exactly. We don't know what season they're going to bloom in.
I love this so much. Okay. My next question is, how has your definition of being a light worker or a mystic changed over the years?
I remember first hearing that term light worker. I must have been in my late teens, I think. Yeah, late teens. And it was like just the phrase and reading the description of what it was like, oh my God, that's what I am. Like there was a recognition in it. But I think early on in my path, I mistook it for being like, and I think it's just because of like the society that we're born into, particularly in the West, it's very individualistic. And so it's like, this is my job, you know? And so it was like this kind of concept of like, we got to save the world and I need to do this. And it's completely changed from that for me. I like the term mystic. That's the phrase that I really love. But what I see now is that we each hold a thread for the healing of humanity. And it's not the healing of the earth. The earth doesn't need us to thrive. Oh. It actually needs the opposite to thrive. And so the question is, will we wake up to that? And I think that at the moment, there seems to be like we're so divisive. There's so much division and so much like this is the way, you know, this is the way. And we're forgetting like just like nature, just like the wildflowers in the garden, like it's like nature thrives from diversity. And so it's like we have to, the way I do this is through connecting with the soul, through connecting what lights you up, through connecting with that inner voice, following that thread that each of us came in with, and to trust that like what you contribute will be different to what I contribute, like the note that each of us came to sing, but it comes in harmony. It's like we're co-creating a thread. We're together in it.
Yes. Oh, and we're not alone. I love that so much. And I resonate with that so much because also early on in my career when I just started, not even career, just in life, when I just discovered the phrase purpose and this whole world of light worker and this, I also thought it meant you have to change the world. You're here to like save the world from its negative trajectory. And I think as I've matured, what I've come to realize is I just have to heal myself and I just have to follow my light. And it's less of an effort of trying to like impose anything outside of me. But if once I heal myself and once I naturally just live from my greatest joy or whatever, I'm already contributing. And just by being yourself, you're already contributing. And naturally, you're going to do things that will help people or will light others up and lift others up. But that's not the focus anymore. At least that's how I've seen it.
So true. Right. Yeah. I love how you've described that. And yeah, even just when you said the word, as I've matured, it's so true. Well done. Yeah.
Okay, Rebecca, if you have a message that you would like to leave our listeners with today, actually, there's two things I want you to do, but you can share the message after this. I want you to pull like an oracle card.
Oh, for sure.
But first, let's share your message before we get the divine message. Okay, what is the final message you want to leave with our listeners?
I think it's follow what lights you up. That feels what's most present. And particularly if you're a creative and an artist, like really tend to the creative process and do the things that are like, yes, this like really sets my soul on fire. Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful. Okay, let's pull a card from your brand new deck.
Let's do it. Okay. Oh, of course. This is so you. I don't know if you can see it. It's as my lights. Okay. The beauty way. I can send you the artwork as well if you want. The beauty way. And so this is all about beauty as a devotional practice. And so when we see beauty around us and notice beauty around us, we are seeing the sacred that's already here. When we bring beauty to everything we do, like from the way we dress to maybe when you're cooking or arranging flowers, just making things more beautiful, it's an act of devotion in itself. So yeah, beautiful. But I'll send you the picture if you want to put it on the screen.
Yeah. What I'm hearing is also like take care of your life with that level of like care and devotion to make things beautiful, because like that care is how you should take care of yourself and everything around you, right? Instead of like mindlessly doing things, it's like
gorgeous.
Yeah, like we love things that are so beautiful because someone was inspired to make it beautiful. Like someone put the care into it.
It's so true. And it's interesting. I read this thing the other day where in nature and also like in humans, and they've done this study where the things that people find beautiful are actually not perfect. There is an imperfection to them. And I think this is the difference between creating and producing as well, right? Because like things that are perfect are probably produced, whereas things that are beautiful, they're beautiful. Like the rose, for example, is so beautiful because it's not going to be around all year. Yes. It's like it's here for this moment. And like we enjoy it, we drink in the fragrance, the nectar, the colors, because it's like it's fleeting, you know?
Yes, yes. And I also saw somewhere on Instagram one time that we psychologically are attracted to beauty and beautiful spaces because beauty makes us feel safe. And it's because only when you are in a safe place can you even think about making things beautiful. Because if you're in survival mode, people don't have time to decorate their homes. Literally calms our nervous system. So there's like the psychological level and the spiritual level of like all these reasons why beauty is actually so good for us. I feel like people most of the time just like brush off beauty like, oh, it's unnecessary. But it is so necessary.
It so is. That's so lovely. Thank you for sharing that.
Yes. Amazing. Okay. So Rebecca, where can our listeners find you online?
I'm in all the places, YouTube, Instagram, and my website's rebeccacampbell.me.
Beautiful. I love this conversation so much. Thank you so much for sharing your space and your energy with us. I'm supporting you always.
Oh, bless you. I appreciate it. I've gotten a lot from our convo as well. Thank you.
Yes. Thanks so much for listening to The Lavender Lifestyle. If you like the podcast, please share your support by leaving a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can also subscribe to our podcast YouTube channel at youtube.com/lavenderlifestyle and follow our Instagram @lavenderlifestyle. Sending you so much love. Bye.